ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय reading from Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 11, which is titled The Symptoms of Living Entities, Texts 29-32. Sri
Bhagavan Uvacha,
Kripalo Akita Droha, Titikshu Savadehinam, Satyasaro Navadhyatma, Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Uddhava, a saintly person is merciful and never injures others. Even if others are aggressive, he is tolerant and forgiving toward all living entities. His strength and meaning in life come from the truth itself. He is free from all envy and jealousy, and his mind is equal in material happiness and distress. Thus he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. His intelligence is never ruled by material desire, and he has controlled his senses. His behaviour is always pleasing, never harsh, and always exemplary, and he is free from possessiveness. He never endeavours in ordinary worldly activities, and he strictly controls his eating. He therefore always remains peaceful and steady. A saintly person is thoughtful and accepts me as his only shelter. Such a person is very cautious in the execution of his duty, is never subject to superficial transformations, because he is steady and noble even in a distressing situation. He has conquered over the six material qualities, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. He is free from all desire for prestige and offer honour to others. He is expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others and therefore never cheats anyone. Rather, he is a well-wishing friend to all, being most merciful. Such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favourable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows the neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Having taken complete shelter of my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. Purport. Verses 29-31 describe 28 qualities of a saintly person, and verse 32 explains the highest perfection of life. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the 17th quality, Matsyana, or taking complete shelter of Krishna, is the most important, and the other 27 qualities automatically appear in one who has become a pure devotee of the Lord. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasati Bhakti Bhagavata Ankitchana Sava Gunas Tatra Samaste Shura, the 28 saintly qualities may be described as follows. Kripalo, a devotee cannot tolerate seeing the world merge in ignorance and suffering the whiplashes of Maya. Therefore, he busily engages in describing Krishna consciousness called Kripalo. Kripalo, or merciful. Akrita Droha, even if someone is offensive towards a devotee never becomes offensive in return. Indeed, never acts interest in any living entity. One may argue that great Vaishnava kings such as Maharaj Yudhisthira and Pariksit Maharaj executed many criminals. However, when justice is properly administered by the state, sinful destructive persons actually benefit from their punishment because they become freed from the severe karmic reactions to their illicit activities. A Vaishnava ruler gives punishment not out of envy or malice, but in faithful obedience to the laws of God. The Mayavada philosophers who want to kill God by imagining that he does not exist are certainly creature drawer, or most injurious to themselves and others. The impersonal imagines that he himself is supreme, and thus creates the most dangerous situation for himself and his followers. So Similarly, the companies who are dedicated to material sense gratification are also killers of the self, because by their absorption in material consciousness, they lose all chance of experiencing the absolute truth and the truth of their own self. Therefore, all living entities that come under the control of material relations and duties are necessarily aggressing themselves and others. And a pure Vaishnava feels great compassion and concern for them. A devotee never uses his mind, body, or words to perform any act harmful to the welfare of any living entity. To Dikshu, a devotee forgives and forgets any offences against himself. A Vaishnava is personally detached from his material body, which is made of pus, stool, blood, and so on. Therefore, the devotee is able to overlook the obnoxious behaviour he sometimes meets with in the course of preaching work, and always deal with people as a perfect gentleman. A Vaishnava gladly chants the holy name of the Lord and tolerates and forgives these fallen conditioned souls who are unable to reciprocate properly with a pure devotee. Satyasara, number four, Satyasara. A devotee always remembers that he is the eternal servant of the Supreme Person of Godhead, who is omniscient, the reservoir of all pleasure, and the ultimate enjoyer of all activities. By avoiding activities outside devotional service, the devotee remains fixed in the truth, does not uselessly waste time, and thus becomes bold, powerful, and steady. Number five, Anavyatma. The devotee knows the material world is a temporary phantasmagoria, and therefore does not envy anyone in any material situation. He never tries to agitate others or criticize them unnecessarily. Six, Sama. A devotee remains steady and equal in material happiness or distress, fame or infamy. His actual wealth is his conscience of Krishna, and he understands that his real self-interest lies outside the scope of material nature. He does not become excited or oppressed by external events, but remains fixed in consciousness of the omnipotency of Lord Krishna. Number seven, Sava Prakaraka. Neglecting one's selfish desires and working for the satisfaction of others is called Parapakara, whereas causing trouble to others for one's personal gratification is called Parapakara. One's Parapakara and the other's Parapakara. A devotee always works for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, who is resting place for all living entities, and thus a devotee's activities are ultimately pleasing to everyone. Devotional service to Lord Krishna is the perfectional stage of welfare work. Since Lord Krishna is the supreme control of everyone's happiness and distress, foolish persons under the influence of false ego to some consume themselves to the ultimate will wishes of others, execute superficial materialistic activities rather than attending to the eternal happiness of others. Because a devotee remains pure and engaged in missionary activities, he's everyone's best friend. Okay, so I read 1 to 7, so whoever gives class tomorrow could do from 8 onwards. I read the first one from 1 to 7, it's quite a proper dozen, another 3 or 4 pages, so maybe nice to have class from this set of verses the next few days. So I read from 1 to 7, person gives class tomorrow, not that. Om Agyam Smaranda Shantan, then I'll take our chapters and my chanting, which I'll make you good of Inga Maha. So the first quality that's mentioned here is merciful. So to the materialistic person, a person engaged in devotional service may not appear to be very merciful. So perhaps we let's have a look at this, or how everybody is actually merciful. They may think, oh, you like doing your religious activities and you're chanting Hare Krishna and you're worshipping your deities with great opulence with flowers and boga and buying expensive fruits. Then they ask, well, how's that? But there are people that are starving, there are people who are sick, people who don't have enough, people who don't have proper housing, people who don't have proper proper sewerage, people who don't have proper food, and you're spending all this money worshipping the deities. Wouldn't it be better to use that money for helping the poor? That would be real mercy. You're doing this because you like doing it, and it's for your own satisfaction. You feel you like this opulent thing, but really, what you should be doing, someone could argue that what you really should be doing is helping the poor and helping those people who don't have proper housing and proper so on and so forth. So how do we understand this point, or how do we deal with this argument? You may encounter this argument sometimes in preaching work. So the example Prabhupada gave sometimes Prabhupada was approached by people who had these kind of ideas, and he gave an analogy. Supposing you find a rich man's son and he's loitering in the street without proper accommodation, proper food. So there are different ways you can respond to that. The first way you might respond, you might say, well, you know, he's a fool. He's left his wealthy father and he's loitering in the street, and
doesn't have any proper food or accommodation. He's blown. He's been given very good opportunities in life, and he's blown it. Tough luck. It's his karma. Let me get on with my business. That might be one approach. The second approach that one might take would be, oh, this guy, he's loitering in the street, he doesn't have any proper food or accommodation. I'll get out my wallet and I'll give him a few crisp $100 bills, which I just got from the automatic teller. I'll help this guy out. So this is the second possible approach, a bit better than the first approach. But it's not the ultimate approach. The third approach one could take would be to say, don't you remember your so-and-so son? Your father was a very rich person. There seems like there's been some misunderstanding between you and your father. But actually, I know your father very well. He's a very loving, kind person. So why don't you go back to your father? Why don't you try and sort out your misunderstanding with your father? So this is the position of a devotee. He tries to connect the living entities back to their father. Actually, Krishna has unlimited resources. So he can adjust all the situations for any individual, either the poverty or the bad health or whatever. They can all be adjusted by Sri Krishna. So a devotee tries to, and he understands that every living entity is a son or daughter of the Supreme Lord, and he tries to reconnect that person with Krishna. Somehow a misunderstanding has developed. Somehow you've misunderstood your position. Because of the minute independence of a living entity, there's always a chance that you can misunderstand, some misunderstanding can develop. But if we understand that Krishna is a loving, forgiving, all-powerful father, and we're all sons and daughters of Krishna, then we don't have to actually be in any sort of distress or inconvenience in the material world. The material world is actually a foreign situation for the living entity. So devotee tries to connect the living entity with the Supreme Father, which will solve all the problems in the ultimate fashion. Sometimes people might wonder about this point, but last year there was a story in the news that about 40 years since the Woodstock Festival, which was the great hippie gathering. So the hippies, often they came from middle class or upper class families. They came from good families with good economic circumstances. But somehow there was some misunderstanding between their parents and them, and they would leave home and they would live in the park or live in derelict buildings and take drugs and engage in illicit sex. But often they were picked up by the police in an intoxicated fashion. And the police would, someone wondered, why don't you go back to your parents? The police were just being a disturbance to society, taking drugs, acting in a crazy fashion. Why don't you go back to your parents? So sometimes we can see even in Western society this happened, that people would leave. Somebody will ask, how can a living entity come to mature world when he has such a nice situation? But even in Western society, this happened in the late 60s, early 70s, that people from well-to-do families, they would leave their homes due to some misunderstanding of their parents. But the police would encourage them, you come from a good family, go back to your parents, whatever misunderstanding. So the devotee mercifully tries to help the living entity get over his misunderstanding that he's developed in relationship to the Supreme Person and God. There's always a chance that the living entity can misuse independence. It's like somebody may be a very wealthy businessman and he employs a servant in his house. Now, he may take very good care of the servant, way treat him very politely, feed him nicely, pay him well, be kind to his family members, like that. So he may treat the servant very well, but the servant may, at some point, he may become envious of the master. Why is he the master and not the servant? Because he's the master because he's a businessman that can run business and make a big profit and therefore afford to pay a servant. But the servant may become envious of the master, even though the master treats him very nicely. It can happen that the servant be envious. So maybe he steals something from the master or he goes away from the master's service and he becomes envious of the master's situation. So sometimes people wonder, sometimes we explain Krishna consciousness, people wonder how can it be we have a nice situation in the spiritual world and now we come to the material world with so many troubles. But there's always a chance that servant starts to become envious of the master, and he may go away from a very nice situation and find himself in some other situation. So a devotee is always merciful. And the greatest mercy is to give Krishna, people Krishna consciousness, mercy in relationship to the soul. Material mercy has its beginning and end, so that the hungry man may be fed, which takes away his hunger, but then after some time he gets some other problem arises. So. But spiritual mercy is eternally beneficial, because whatever one does in terms of spiritual life accumulates eternally. So the best thing we can do for living beings is to give them prasadam, spiritual knowledge through transcendental literatures, and engage them in devotional service, all of which will make them dear to Krishna, and all of which will revive their eternal spiritual nature. So devotee is, saintly person is merciful, and he understands the real mercy is to reconnect the fallen living entities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the corollary of that is that he never injures others. So he has no desire to cause any harm to others. A devotee understands that he's under the laws of material nature. We shouldn't think that people who become devotees become free from the laws of material nature. So if we do some harm to others, ultimately what we're doing is harming ourselves, because we have to get that reaction back. Even if we're thinking we're harming somebody else, somebody does something to us, think, well, I'm going to get him. But actually, even if we're able to get him, that was something that he has, some reaction he's got for something he's done previously. But what we've actually done is created an action for which we have to get a reaction subsequently. So devotees never inclined to cause any harm to others, understanding the laws of material nature are operating. In fact, if somebody causes harm to a devotee understands that he has some karmic debt that has to be paid off. So he doesn't even have a retaliatory mood. There's no mood of retaliation for a devotee. It's like you spend some money on your credit card, and then you've got a debt, and then you've got to work to pay it off. So similarly, we have a karmic credit card, and there are a few debts on it, which have to be paid off. So if somebody does something that's harmful to us, then we let it pass. Okay, that's some karmic debt that's been related. Actually, as simple reactions are removed, then we gradually become more purified. It actually helps us advance in spiritual life. We can also take the viewpoint that Krishna, anytime we find ourselves in adverse circumstance, we can also understand that Krishna is reminding us this material world is not a place to become complacent and happy in. That the real nature of the material world is being exposed to us. So this is Krishna's kindness. He allows us to get some little reaction for what we may have committed great offences previously, including many simple activities. And Krishna allows that little reaction in order to purify us. The devotee is not strictly under the law of karma, but he's given some reactions, some token reactions, in order to help him become fully purified, to give up to help him give up any attraction and attachment he has to the material nature. Even if others are aggressive, he is tolerant and forgiving towards all living entities. So sometimes when we go out for preaching work, we meet people, they're apathetic or they're opposed, or they don't appreciate what we're doing, they try and stop us. So a devotee has to be tolerant in those circumstances. Prabhupada gave the example of Jesus Christ, that even when he was being crucified, he prayed, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. And Haridas Thakur, he also had the example of Haridas Thakur, who was being beaten in 22 marketplaces. So the Muslim authorities, they had condemned Haridas Thakur. You're a Muslim and now you become a Hindu. So therefore the proper punishment is you must be beaten in different marketplaces until you leave your body. So this was the punishment according to the Muslim system at that time. So the servants of the Muslim government, they took him to 22 marketplaces, and they beat him in 22 marketplaces. But still he didn't die. So they were getting tired from all the beating that they were giving him. So they said to him, look, we've beaten you for 22 marketplaces and you're still alive, but we have to carry out the orders of the governor. Can you make things a bit easier for us? So Haridas Thakur said, okay, you want me to die? I'll leave my body. So he went into Samadhi and they threw him in a river. So he even had been beaten in so many marketplaces, he wanted to help the Muslims by appearing to have left his body. So this is the very great devotee. They're very tolerant of the living entity. He understands the living entity is the living entity that is causing harm to us. he's also part and parcel of Krishna, and he's forgiving to all the living. He doesn't want any harm to come to some living entity that one who is causing trouble. So sometimes when somebody does something wrong to me, I go through different emotions. First thing might be retaliate, and then I think, that's my karma, better not to retaliate because I'll get bad karma down the track. And my second emotion is that I can't wait till the material energy gets them. They got me, and I can't wait till the material energy gets them. So this is not a very advanced platform. Rather, we should be forgiving towards living entities, and we shouldn't wish any harm on anyone else, even if they've harmed us. So I hope one day to come to this platform. We're reading these qualities of devotees, but we shouldn't think we've automatically developed these qualities. These are what we should be aspiring for, and when we fall short of it, we can see we still have a lot of work to do in terms of our purification and self-realisation. A devotee's strength and meaning in life comes from the truth itself. So this is the devotee's goal is the truth. Sometimes people wonder why people like become terrorists or disturbing elements of society. But often people also reflect that you're born into the world and then you get educated and then you go and work a job and you earn money and then you spend that money in different ways. And then the question arises, well, what was your whole life for? What was the whole purpose for? What was it all about? So sometimes people who don't have any purpose in life, they become attracted to some sort of ghastly type activity like terrorism. But a devotee gives a person the real meaning in life by coming to the point of the truth itself. Which means the truth is that you are a spirit soul, you're not the material body, and you're eternally servant of Krishna. So by reconnecting with Krishna, then you can understand your eternal nature and become free from the cycle of birth and death and actually give real benefit to other living entities. Sometimes people who engage in mundane welfare work, they wonder whether they've really given any benefit to other people. There was one famous astrologer in India, and he approached a devotee astrologer and he said, I've been reading people's charts for many years and telling them what their future's going to be. But I couldn't really change their future. It's predestined, they're going to get what they're going to get. So I can tell them what their future is, but I can't really change it. I haven't really benefited them. So sometimes people in ordinary welfare work, they have this problem. They wonder, I haven't really benefited people. Because in ordinary welfare work, you're still dealing with people on a bodily platform. And generally people get rid of one problem and then some other type of problem arises. So somebody who's poor, they may think, somebody who gets maybe one or two meals a day, then they think, I'll be happy when I get to three meals a day. But when they get to three meals a day, then they think, well, I'll be happy when I get a house, when I get my own house. And then when they own a house and they're eating three meals a day, well, I think, well, I've got to have some investment property because I've got to go out to work. And pay for my house. So I need two houses, actually. So you can lift a person's economic circumstances, but they'll always think, I need more, I deserve more. Your needs tend to grow as you develop economically, but your needs tend to expand also. They did a study in the United States. They asked people how much money they needed to live comfortably. So the people earning $20,000 a year, they said we need $30,000 a year to live comfortably. And the people earning $30,000 a year, they said we need $50,000 a year to live comfortably. And the people earning $50,000 a year, they said we need $80,000 to live comfortably. And the people earning $80,000 a year, they said we need $150,000 a year to live comfortably. So this is the tricky nature of Maya, is that whatever we have, if we're in material economy, we never think it's quite enough. And therefore, there's always some dissatisfaction, even welfare education lists the person's economic circumstances, but still the person will think that it's not enough. So this is the limited nature of the true worship. Devotee gets strength and meaning from the truth itself. So devotee's goal is not to gratify the senses, which ultimately ends in disappointment and frustration, But he gets meaning from life from uncovering his spiritual nature and by helping others uncovering the spiritual nature. So many people become frustrated, they have no meaning in life, and they try to block things out with intoxication, or in some cases suicide. But a devotee tries to give others the real meaning of life. You are spirit soul, you are eternally connected with Krishna, you belong in the spiritual abode where these different miseries don't exist. So the devotee never struggles to have some meaning in his life, in the purpose of life. But other people, they may get to the end of life and wonder what it's all about, what it's all for. A devotee's mind is equal to material happiness and distress. So material happiness comes and distress comes, as sure as summer comes and winter comes. So now it's winter, but in the future it'll be summer, and if it's summer, then in the future it'll also be winter. So materially things are always up and down. Even around your temple, sometimes things are up and sometimes down. Sometimes you get a good donation, the next moment the council come in and say you're going to make some major adjustment that's going to cost you a whole lot of money. So you have to remain mentally equally poised in the thing. By going on with your duty in Krishna consciousness, by not becoming attached to being in a comfortable situation. Because Srila Prabhupada, who was guest puja we had on Saturday, he had a very nice situation in Vrindavan to chant Hare Krishna and visit the different temples of the Goswamis and be in situated in Krishna consciousness. But he left that situation because he remembered the order of his spiritual master to go to the Western countries and preach Krishna consciousness. His spiritual master also, if you remember the story when Prabhupada first met his spiritual master, that time Prabhupada was sympathetic to Gandhi's movement. And Prabhupada, he asked Srila Bhaktivedanta, he asked the question, he said that India is now a subjugated country. At that time India was under the control of the English. And we might take this message outside of India, but who's going to take it seriously while India is a subjugated country? There's a certain logic in the argument. Who's going to take a country seriously that's not even qualified to be independent? Who's going to take them seriously? But Srila Bhaktivedanta, he's a big dude with strong Vaishnava understanding. He explained that sometimes living entities wealthy, sometimes he's poor, sometimes he's a master of a business, sometimes he's a servant, sometimes he's powerful, sometimes he's subjugated, sometimes he's male, sometimes he's male. All these dualities are there in the material world. We're born in a duality. The first question everybody asks when the baby is born, is it a boy or a girl? First question, is it a boy or a girl? So duality from the very first breath, is it a boy or a girl? So everything is duality. Rich, poor, healthy, sick, male, female, day, night, everything is hot, cold, everything is duality in this material world. So the way he has to keep his mind equally material happiness, just understanding these things will come and go, and go on with his duty in terms of Krishna consciousness, devotional service. So that means we can't afford to become elated if material circumstances become favourable. Supposing somebody gives a $3 million donation to the temple, and we think, oh, okay, well, I won't do any more service, we'll just hire some people to clean the temple. And hire some people to cook the offerings, and hire people to worship the deity, and hire people to go down to Crossways and serve. No, the devotee remains simple. He goes on with his duty in terms of Krishna consciousness. Don't become elated, and then if something materially favourable happens, and then become complacent in terms of Krishna consciousness. So complacency, for somebody who's taken up the process of Krishna consciousness, complacency can be a big enemy in terms of further advancement. Because we stay in Krishna consciousness, we get a certain amount of knowledge and a certain amount of freedom from suffering and freedom from ignorance. And it can feel kind of nice, but the danger with that niceness is that we become complacent, so we don't properly execute our spiritual duties. So duties mean we, instead of coming to Mangalati, we sleep in, and instead of chanting attentively, we think about some other thing. We can become, so that's the danger of material happiness. And material distress, they may also come. So sometimes we may be engaging in Krishna consciousness, and we may get very sick. We think, oh, why has Krishna done this to me? Krishna can cure me, but he's given me the flu, and I'm flat on my back and suffering like a dog. So So why Krishna? He can cure me instantly, but he's put me in this situation. So also to stress, sometimes things may be very difficult in terms of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada quoted his Guru Shamatha Subhakana saying, sometimes we take it across the Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't expect an easy life, but actually we can expect a path that is strewn with thorns. So sometimes it's like that also in Krishna consciousness. So the point is that if things are difficult and disturbing, we shouldn't become discouraged. It's whatever difficulties, disturbances we've been put through, that's some method that Krishna is giving us to help us become advanced in Krishna consciousness. It may be after a period where things are going nicely and we've got a bit complacent, therefore Krishna gives us the other side of the material energy where things become difficult and hard going in order to shake us out of our complacency. That is Krishna's kindness, and he gives us some reaction from time to time. That is his kindness to shake us out of any lethargy or complacency or procrastination that may arise in terms of our spiritual life. Sometimes we think that Krishna consciousness is the goal of life, but we think later on I'll become serious about this process. At the moment I'll just come to the temple and externally I'll go through the motions, but I won't really work on the internals. I'll just go through the motions. At the end of life I'll go through the internals. That means we've already succumbed to a certain complacency and lethargy. So if things become good in the material sense, then we shouldn't become complacent. And if things become bad in the material sense, we shouldn't become despondent. In any case, we should go on. We should proceed with Krishna consciousness in terms of full enthusiasm. Thus, the devotee dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. So this is the ultimate welfare work, to help people revive their Krishna consciousness, revive their spiritual understanding. His intelligence is never ruled by material desires, he's controlled his senses. So one has to reinforce the intelligence by regularly hearing Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, hearing classes on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This way one makes one's intelligence strong in Krishna consciousness, and one learns to defeat materialistic ideas or materialistic conceptions that may arise any time in the mind. Because we've had so many lifetimes in the material energy, there's always the chance that some materialistic conception, materialistic idea can arise in the mind. Therefore, we can defeat this if we have strong intelligence. We develop strong intelligence by regular attendance at Bhagavatam class and regularly studying the shastras of our own, on our own efforts. So generally, there's four ways of becoming familiar with the subject matter. To become really expert in the subject matter, there are four things that one has to do. The first one is that one has to take a teacher. So you can't become a qualified medical practitioner just by reading some books. You have to take a teacher. So we have the spiritual master. We have our individual spiritual master. We have sort of Prabhupada, the supreme spiritual master. So it's the first factor that is important in becoming learned in the spiritual science. The second factor is that one has to do the homework. One has to make one's own individual effort. One has to read these books. So aside from attendance and class, one should be also doing one's own study, reflecting on the points that are made in the verses and translation, and then trying to apply those points in our life. The third point is that the students of the subject matter should discuss the subject matter amongst themselves. When I was at university, I was studying statistics, and I was finding that some people about the same intelligence as me were picking up the subject matter much quicker than I was. So I was wondering, why is this that these people are picking up quicker? And then I found out they were all sitting together in the library and going through the subject matter together. So this is also there. So we don't always have access to our spiritual master, but we can discuss these subjects amongst each other. And this way, this is the third way in which the challenge becomes strong. I may understand something about Krishna consciousness, we respect others that they've also understood something about Krishna consciousness, and hear what their realisations are. So here, this chapter, you're very fortunate, you have many different people who can give Srimad Bhagavatam class. So you can listen to them, and if you get the chance also, you should give the Srimad Bhagavatam class, try and present the Krishna consciousness. So this way there's an exchange between the students, and they become familiar with the subject matter much more quickly. Just like I mentioned, when I was studying statistics, there were people at the same time as me, but they were picking up the subject matter fast enough because they were sitting together and going through the subject matter together. So this is the third factor. So take a teacher, homework, individual homework, and then discussing the subject matter amongst the students. And the fourth factor is time. Everything won't be revealed at once, but Krishna will gradually reveal within the heart. Even if we're not so scholarly, we shouldn't become discouraged from experiencing these four processes, because this subject matter is not revealed on the basis of one's IQ. If you don't have a very big IQ, you may not be able to get a PhD in nuclear physics or quantum mechanics or something. If you're struggling academically, you may not be able to study ancient Latin or ancient Greek or something, if you don't have much material aptitude. But spiritual knowledge is inherent to the soul. So it's there within the soul. So it can be revealed by removing the material coverings. So the more we engage in Krishna consciousness, gradually spiritual knowledge will reveal within the heart. So we have it even in our line. We have the example of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who, materially speaking, was not a very educated person. He was a businessman, but what I understood is he could barely read. But when anyone approached him with any philosophical inquiry, he could immediately deal with it. He could immediately see through anybody who was cheating, anybody who was claiming to be a religious person who was an imposter. He could immediately get all wisdom and all spiritual knowledge within the heart. Although, from the material angle, he was not very highly educated. So we understand spiritual knowledge is actually there within the soul. It's not based on material aptitude. So we shouldn't become discouraged if we didn't do well in school. Some of the devotees here may mean they didn't do so well in school. But they shouldn't become discouraged, because it depends on... the spiritual knowledge can be revealed according to one's effort at self-purification. So devotee is intelligent, never ruled by one of his desires, and control of the senses. Controlling of the senses by engaging Krishna consciousness. By engaging the senses in the service of Krishna, by spiritual engagement of the senses, then the senses become controlled in the material sense. If one simply tries to control the senses by repression, that won't be ultimately successful. It's like Sarabi Muni was sitting in the water for 50,000 years, but when he saw a fish engaging in sex life, then he perceived the pleasures of sexual enjoyment, and then he wanted to become a householder. Even one can't control the senses through repression. And I think David Lewis might tell the story of someone who was American and became a Buddhist monk in Thailand. He was 12 years into performing austerities, and then somebody was walking past with a boombox, blowing out some song, "I Love Laura."
Oh, yeah, "Tell Laura I Love You."
So then he remembered his previous activities in terms of sense play when he left this monastery. So he said ultimately these processes of trying to repress the senses don't work, even in the case of Bhagavatam and Sarabi Muni. And even in modern society, sometimes people they become disgusted with material enjoyment and they go to a monastery, but then they hear, "Tell Dora I love her." they perceive the sense of enjoyment. So the way to control the senses is to engage in devotional service. Okay, and freedom from all envy. So one technique I use to free myself from envy, some of you may find it valuable, is that sometimes we might think, might see a rich person, we may may think, "Oh, I wish I why him and not me? I wish I was like that." Or we may see some guy with a very beautiful girl, "Oh, why him?" So we might become envious. Blaine's laughing. Okay, but materially good and bad, they're not absolute. You say it's better to be rich than to be poor, but there's a lot of problems that come with being rich also. If you're rich, the tax office are always very interested in your tax return. So sometimes the rich people, they spend hours with their accountant and their lawyer trying to work out how they can avoid paying the tax. And then you may be a rich guy and you think, "Well, the girls are going to be attracted to me." But the girls may be attracted to you, but are they attracted to you or your money? And if they're attracted to your money, you may find after a couple of years you've got a divorce case and they take half your fortune. And then you may have your children, and your children may think, "Well, I'm going to inherit all Dad's wealth, so what's the point of studying hard at school?" no point doing all this boring homework when I'm going to be a millionaire anyway. I'm never going to have to work anyway. So, instead of doing homework, let me go out and party. So, if we study it carefully, there's a lot of problems that would come with being wealthy. It makes it nice to own four properties, but you've also got to manage four properties. I mean, you've got to pay four sets of rates, and you've got to secure four properties, make sure that people aren't breaking in and destroying the property. You've got to furnish the four properties. Like my father, he had a holiday house, but then during the holiday he spent the whole 5 weeks doing everything up in the holiday house. So, if in someone else's situation it can seem nice in theory, but materially something's good, but it's bad. I mean, somebody's poverty, perhaps they've only got enough money just to get by, but they don't have so much anxiety in terms of having to manage a whole and secure a whole property, so they can dedicate more time to Christian content and trying to maintain their prestige and their influence. There was one story in the news that Kerry Packer's son, he was very depressed because he inherited $6 billion and now he's only worth $3 billion. So sometimes somebody gets a big inheritance, but the stock market goes down or whatever, and their wealth is less than what their father had, and they feel, I'm a failure in life. So if we study carefully, that it can seem better to be rich or poor, but it's not absolutely better to be rich than poor. There are problems that come with being rich. Therefore, you often see rich people are very unhappy or frustrated. Something like this. So in some way, it might be better to be well than to be sick, but sometimes we're well and people expect us to all day long engage in different types of devotional service. Sometimes we feel that there's a lack of internal growth, we're doing things very externally. Sometimes even when we become sick, then that becomes an opportunity to work more on the internal, think about how we're doing. Because the devotees may leave us from our service for that day and we can work more on the internals. And the bloke who's got a very beautiful girl, he gets an anxiety. who else is looking at my beautiful girl? So he's thinking in one sense that he's very happy I've got this beautiful girl, but he's also, the anxiety has also gone up. His material happiness has gone up. His anxiety has also gone up. So if we study the material nature very carefully, we'll see that good is bad and bad is good. The guy may have a very beautiful girlfriend, but has she got a nice personality, or is she expecting all kinds of flavours? Where somebody may have a plain girlfriend, but she may have a very nice personality. So this is the nature of material life. Good is bad and bad is good, just from different angles of vision, different perspectives. So in this way, if we remember this point, we can learn not to be envious of others, not to be jealous of what others have. Ultimately, whatever they have, if it's somebody, they've got on the basis of their karma, and they enjoy it for some time, and then after some time it's finished. If we don't have it, then we didn't merit it according to our karma, so we haven't performed the right path of activity. So there's no need to be disturbed or envious or jealous of what other people have for devotee. We can understand things philosophically, and sometimes wealth is a very bewildering quality. So in the Bhagavatam, there's a story of Kuvera and Manigriva, who were the sons of Kuvera. And because they became very wealthy, they just engaged in intoxication. So although their father was a very great devotee of the Supreme Lord, they were just bathing in sacred rivers, but not honouring the sacred rivers properly because they were bathing naked with women and taking intoxication. So one time, Narada Muni came past, and the women that they were bathing with, they immediately covered their bodies. But Nala Kavera and Manigriva, they were so shameless that they didn't even cover their bodies. So then he cursed them that you'll have to stand as trees for thousands of years. You like being naked, therefore stand naked as a tree for thousands of years. So sometimes this happens. People are wealthy, but they think that their wealth has been given to from material enjoyment. That's why they engage in those activities, and they fall down into a hellish situation. Of course, Almanala is very many group, they cursed to stand as trees, but they placed as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. So ultimately they were delivered by Krishna. But for a very long time they had to stand as trees and remember their offences and how they fall from their position. So there are dangers that come with wealth also. Prabhupada said in the Western countries he saw that people were economically well situated, but they misinterpreted their situation. We become economically well situated, it means we don't have to struggle so much just to keep body and soul together. It gives us the chance to engage in Krishna consciousness. where somebody may be very struggling very hard materially, and they may have to work huge numbers of hours and go walk miles to get water and so on and so forth. They may not have so much time to engage in Krishna consciousness. So we're offered these, Australia generally considered a well-off country, and we're offered these opportunities, this opportunity to engage in Krishna consciousness, but many people then misinterpret, oh, I've been born into a wealthy situation in order for me to be facilitated in terms of more sense gratification. Therefore, there are all kinds of illicit activities that are set up for people who have this problem, alcohol and other types of intoxication, gambling, so on and so forth, partying, movies, pornography, all types of illicit activities. People think, oh, I've been born in a wealthy country and therefore, but this will lead to actual degradation. So the body has to remain equal in all situations. Material energy is always in flux, always changing. Sometimes one's up, sometimes one's down, but one should stick to one's duty in terms of Krishna consciousness. These qualities of the saintly person are given to us to sort of know what we're aspiring for, vision what we're aspiring for. We shouldn't think that because we took up Krishna consciousness 3 years ago that we now got all these 28 saintly qualities. But we should understand what the goal is, and we should be working towards those goals. Not that we have to, 1 week we spend, like, I'm going to be non-envious this week, and the next week I'm going to be non-jealous. And the next week I'm going to be worse of all than the Indies. Not so much like that. We have to focus on the core individually. But as we engage in Krishna, as we perform our duties, whatever they are, book distribution, cleaning, cooking, paraphernalia services, whatever, as we perform these duties, gradually these qualities will develop within us. And when we find these different mentalities developing that are unfavourable, such as envy and jealousy, then we can curb them. Spiritual knowledge. Okay, so I've done 1 to 7, so whoever's giving class tomorrow will start number 8. I'll stop there and ask if anybody's got any comments or questions.
Srila Prabhupada said that from this very body you can be recovered by chanting and achieving the devotee.
Yeah.
And, otherwise, if you come back again, PhD, all your degree, PhD, MD, whatever, everything you finish, all your breath.
Yeah, materially it's all lost at the time of death.
Everything is lost. So you fly in this human body and go to the world from this material.
Yeah, material life is a zero-sum game. You think about it. Because if you say you accumulate $1 million, then at death you lose $1 million. Whereas if you accumulate $10,000 of debt, you only lose $10,000. And you accumulate $100 million, at that time of death, you lose $100 million. So it's a zero sum game. Whatever you've gained, you lose exactly the same amount at the time of death.
Absolutely.
So they have this concept in material life, zero sum game, but they understand the whole material life is a zero sum game. Whatever you, exactly the same amount you gain in this life, you lose exactly the same amount at the time of death.
As you say, you can never be happy
in the material world. Never, never. You can't have happiness without anxiety in the material world. In fact, people often wonder, as their affluence and importance goes, they have more anxiety. Because the person who's the head of the company, the CEO, his whole company performance is related to him, in the sense that if the company goes well, he'll be glorified and thanked and praised and so on and so forth. And the company goes badly, and all be blamed upon him, he'll be ridiculed, if he criticised. So, it seems to be head of the company, one might think, oh, it's better to be the head of the company than the bottom of the company. But nobody blames the person serving the cause of the company going bankrupt, or the share price going down, or having to lay off workers. They all blame the CEO. So, it's materially good is bad, and bad is good. If we remember this point, that we don't become envious of other people's situations. Because the good, what seems to be good, inevitably has its bad side. It's not absolute, in other words.
I have a question from you. How do you define Krishna consciousness?
How do you define Krishna
consciousness?
Define. It means constant remembrance of Krishna. It means you've got one's constant remembering Krishna. Which means that, it doesn't mean that every second of the day you have to be thinking specifically about Krishna or Krishna's form, but if you engage in devotional service, then that's not different from remembering Krishna. So it means utilizing every moment in relation to Krishna. So Prabhupada says Arjuna on the battle of Kurukshetra, he was thinking about how to kill the opposing soldiers. But that's skewed in terms of Krishna, because that's also a remembrance of Krishna.
Following the instruction of
the spiritual master. Any other thoughts? Okay. Thank you very much, Zayda Kodasi. So everybody should try and chant every extra round. So there's extra potency in spiritual activities on Kodasi. And material energy is less favourable on Kodasi. So don't try and do too much materially, but rather use the time probably. I try and chant extra round and extra study and apologize for many mistakes of the class were a little bit disorganized. I thought that called it the last time. I was prepared, so I apologize for any shortcomings in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay, Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki.